Dr. Kevin Cavanaugh is with us, as he is once a month. Good morning, Kevin.
Oh, good morning, sir.
Tell us about HealthWatch USA,
Kevin.
We're
a nonprofit organization whose main mission is patient advocacy and also healthcare transparency. That means knowing what the cost and the quality of the healthcare that you receive.
Okay. And you have lined up a wonderful guest for us this morning. He is a professor of preventive medicine and infectious diseases at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. He's also on the CDC's Vaccine Advisory Committee. And, of course, we're all hearing the stories about measles.
Yes, and I think it's a very timely topic, and it's one that we really need to discuss with the audience and maybe clear up some misconceptions.
Dr. William Shafter, good morning, sir.
Good morning, everyone.
I bet you're sick of Star Trek jokes, aren't you?
They've gone on forever, but it's okay.
Well,
beam me up, Scotty.
Yeah, Dr. Shatner, William Shatner, actually has a farm here not too far from Lexington.
Well, a horse farm,
that's right. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Shatner. Tell us, we heard this morning on the news that this measles outbreak is getting closer to us. It was out west. Now I understand there's a case in Chicago and one in Georgia. Is that right?
Well, it's been spreading all over the country. Of course, it started at Disneyland, and then the virus was imported into the United States. You see, we had eliminated measles completely, not only from this country, but the entire Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
But parents who are withholding their children from vaccination are the fuel for this epidemic. Those are the children who are getting measles now, very sadly, because measles, despite what you might think, is a very serious disease.
It can actually kill you, can it not?
Yeah, absolutely. Your listeners will be stunned when I say, back before we had measles vaccine, in the United States, each and every year, somewhere between 400 and 500 children died of measles and its complications.
That just blows me away, and it is incredibly contagious.
It's very contagious. Measles virus actually is the single most contagious, the most transmissible virus we know. Let me give you a comparison. You know, we all know that flu is highly contagious, but for that to spread efficiently, the person with flu has to be within about 3 or 4 feet of the recipient of the virus for it to spread. But with measles, a person who's got the measles or is going to get it the next day can walk into a room, breathe out, because the measles virus is in the air that we breathe out, that person can leave the room, and then another susceptible person come into the room an hour later and pick up the infection and get sick.
Wow.
No other virus is that transmissible.
Oh, yeah. According to the CDC, 90% of the close contacts of someone who has measles will come down with the disease. And this, for example, compares with Ebola. I mean, everybody was so scared about Ebola.
Right.
Well, you had a gentleman who was symptomatic, was discharged from the hospital, 2 days sitting around, living in a closed quarters, small apartment with his family, along with mingling around in the community, and no one else got Ebola from him during that time. And so when you look at transmissibility between that type of an infection versus measles, measles is much, much more transmissible and an extremely serious disease. And the other big point is, I think the listeners need to realize, is that not all vaccines are the same. You know, when you the most common vaccine people talk about is the flu vaccine, and every year there's a new strain of flu virus. A new flu vaccine comes out. Sometimes it's more effective than others. That's not the case with measles. The measles virus has been around for a long time. The vaccine is stable. It is effective. If you get the two doses, you should be greater than 95%, or the chances are greater than 95% that you will be immune to the disease. So it's extremely important to get this.
Senator Rand Paul put his foot in his mouth last week. He's from our state, of course, Dr. Shatner, and he's a doctor, so he should have known better than to say what he said, but he said something to the effect of there are a lot of kids walking around today that have health problems related to the measles vaccine. And then he backed up and said, well, he didn't really mean to say that the vaccine, you know, he just flat put his foot in his mouth.
Well, I don't like to make jokes at the expense of politicians. I like to talk about medicine, but I have said that Dr. Paul is an ophthalmologist, but he's not seeing this issue very clearly.
Right.
But he walked it back, and thank goodness. It's quite clear that measles vaccine is an extraordinarily safe vaccine. Let's take a deep breath and think about this. It's been given not only in this country but around the world to millions of children. It has eliminated this awful disease from large land masses. As I said before, the entire Western Hemisphere is free of measles at the present time, except for this outbreak in the United States. So in Nicaragua, Mexico, Chile, Argentina, among the Eskimo, there is no measles because of this vaccine. The World Health Organization uses it around the world. Would we be doing this if the vaccine were not safe and effective? Hello?
Mm.
Yeah, and again, you need to really stress that not all vaccines are the same. It's just like different types of drugs and different types of medications. And this is definitely a vaccine. It's mandated. A child has to have this in Kentucky before starting school. And it is very important that parents get this vaccine. If you're homeschooling your child, that doesn't mean you don't need the vaccine. You need to get the vaccine.
Well, give us the history, Dr. Schaffner, of the misinformation about the vaccine, that it caused autism, et cetera.
Well, I'm sighing, but we go back now about a decade when a physician, now discredited, Andrew Wakefield in London, made an allegation that the measles vaccine was associated first with a gastrointestinal problem. He was a gastroenterologist. And then in the news conference associated with the publication of this allegation in the journal Lancet, there was a news conference. That's when he made the association with measles vaccine and autism. And since then, that concept has resonated around the world and has taken particular root in the United States. Now, this allegation has been studied up to 20 times by different investigators in different countries, in different populations, and they've all come up with a negative association. There is no association. That's fiction. In fact, the original study was totally discredited, retracted by the journal, and because of unethical conduct in the context of the so-called investigation that was originally done, Dr. Wakefield has had his license to practice medicine stripped from him in the United Kingdom. So the whole thing was bogus. It was a sham. And yet, as you all in the media know only too well, it's hard to unring the bell. And so this concept persists and smolders and causes concern. I really think one of the big issues is, think about this, we've been so successful in eliminating measles that today's moms have never seen a case. You see, they never had measles.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that their mothers, the grandmother of the new child, perhaps they never even saw measles because of this successful immunization program in this country that began in the 1960s. So they don't know the disease. They don't respect, and indeed they don't fear it.
Right.
And if that happens, they don't value the vaccine.
And I wonder why this allegation that was made by the doctor who lost his license to practice medicine and has been proven over and over again to these allegations to be false, that continues to have legs in this country. Is it because of celebrities like Jenny McCarthy, I think is her name, made a big deal about it in the media?
That certainly was an amplifying factor. And there are a group of people who still support Dr. Wakefield, still stubbornly adhere to the notion that measles vaccine and other vaccines may be seriously harmful and inappropriately used in our children. And the celebrity culture advocacy for this, and then the media coverage of it, really accelerated it. And of course, now we have the internet, and these concepts can persist on the internet, and people who are naive, others with questions going on the internet, find it difficult to distinguish malarkey that's on the internet from genuine, solid information.
924, 24 past the hour of 9 o'clock on News Talk 590 WBLK. Dr. Kevin Cavanaugh is in the studio with us, and on the phone with us from Vanderbilt University School of Medicine is Dr. William Schaffner, and he is the professor of preventive maintenance and infectious diseases there down at Vanderbilt, and I'm also a member of the CDC's Vaccine Advisory Committee. And we're talking about measles and the measles vaccine. And we got a call in the break, Dr. Schaffner, from a woman that didn't want to go on the air. She said if her kids got vaccinated back in the 50s or 60s for measles, are they covered today?
Well, the short answer is yes. They were appropriately vaccinated back in the 1960s. The measles vaccine should give you, as Kevin said before, a 95-plus chance of being protected for your lifetime. It's really a great vaccine.
Kevin, you were talking about the fact
it's a really a public health issue.
Right.
Because if you don't get a vaccine, it doesn't just affect you, but it actually affects other people in the community or in Lexington and your neighbors. And unfortunately, not everybody can get the vaccine. If you're undergoing chemotherapy, if you've got cancer, if you're immunosuppressed, and you depend upon other people in the community being vaccinated so that virus doesn't spread around the community. And that's called herd immunity. That's actually the scientific term for it.
Yeah.
And the vaccination rates really need to be, for measles, 95%. I mean, 95% of the population covered. And you can get that with our vaccine. And luckily, in our school system, we have a very high rate of vaccination. And it is, you know, very important, because I don't think any of us want to have our children exposed to other people that aren't vaccinated that could be carrying this very deadly disease.
And it's not a law per se, right? I mean, you have to have the vaccine to get in public school.
Yeah, I think there's an exemption, I believe, that you can homeschool. But, you know, they do stress, you need to get this vaccine to get into school paperwork.
Should it be a law, Dr. Schaffner?
Well, all 50 states have some law, and they've been passed in 50 states. This is not a federal law.
Mm-hmm.
This is a local law passed by legislators at the local level saying, in effect, no shots, no school. Because there are 50 states, the laws vary across the country, and they permit, first of all, each one of them does, permits exemptions for bona fide medical reasons. The issue is that there are many states that also provide religious and personal belief exemptions. A personal belief exemption is, I don't believe in vaccines, so I'm not going to get my child vaccinated. Obviously, those states that have those exemptions have a higher proportion of children in their schools unvaccinated. And that's where the problem is. And it's those children who are susceptible when measles or other vaccine-preventable diseases are reintroduced into this country from other parts of the world. You know, it's not been in the public consciousness that we in public health have really decided, Kevin will agree with this, that our standard regarding measles in this country is zero cases. We don't want a single one. We don't want any child to have to suffer a case of measles and perhaps its serious complications. So in order to achieve zero with a virus that's so highly transmissible, we have to basically vaccinate every child.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and this is Ron. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen. If I remember, a lot of the concerns about vaccines were based on the pharmaceuticals using a preservative called Tamiflu that was mercury-based as a preservative to extend the shelf life of those vaccines. Do you know if the pharmaceuticals are still using Tamiflu?
Well, let me respond to that. First, that was an issue, just as Ron says. Number two, it was another one of those false issues. Thimerosal is indeed a preservative. It has been used around the world safely for decades. Nonetheless, vaccine manufacturers said this was causing so much hullabaloo that we'll take it out of all of our vaccines. And so all of the routine vaccines that are now being administered to children, and this has been true for 5, 6, 7, 8 years now, are thimerosal free. Incidentally, apropos of measles, thimerosal was never in measles vaccine.
It never was, huh?
It never was from day one.
Interesting. Well, I appreciate your call. Thank you, Ron. I think I'm 62, and I think when I got the vaccine when I was a kid, it was a combination of measles, mumps, and rubella. Is that right?
Perfect.
Is that
exactly what we're using today?
Okay. Now, I heard just within the last week that there now is another outbreak of mumps.
Yes, and there's an outbreak of mumps once again reintroduced into the United States, likely from Europe. And the issue with mumps is a combination issue. Some of it has to do with children being withheld from vaccine, but the other is that mumps of the three vaccines, measles, mumps, and rubella, that are together, mumps is, if you will, the weak sister. Because after about 10 or 15 years, some people have diminished protection, such that if they're exposed to mumps, they'll become sick, usually with a much milder case. But yes, they will get sick and can transmit it to others. So, as Kevin said, all vaccines are not alike. That's not quite as good as the measles vaccine, for example.
And Dr. Kevin Cavanaugh in the studio with us. Dr. William Schaffer is on the telephone with us, and he's a member of the CDC Vaccine Advisory Committee. And we're talking about the measles vaccine and the importance of having your child vaccinated. Back to your calls. This is Jim. Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I don't have any problem with this. It's, you know, I think probably everybody should get it, especially our children. But excuse my voice, I'm a little bit hoarse. But the thing is, I'm our government is two-faced, and they need to, you know, say, well, we need to close our borders down completely before they start telling everybody what to do. And that's the second part of this problem is, if we're going to let everybody in this country just come in willy-nilly when, you know, they're going to bring all their bad stuff with them and give it to us, that's not right.
Here's an email that goes along the same lines as your comment, Jim. It says, your guest claims that the current outbreak was imported to the U.S. from where and with the non-existent controls over our borders, what other such epidemics may be headed our way? Thank you, Jim. What do you say, Dr. Schaffner?
Well, Jim and your other listener, you're going to smile. Actually, you'll be very surprised. The people who bring these infections back are our own children. Here's what's happened. The parents withhold their children from vaccines. They grow up. They're 7, 8, 9. These are parents with means. These are parents who are middle or upper middle class. So they take their children abroad on a trip to Europe or Israel, for the most part. There, the children acquire measles, bring it back into the United States, our kids, and then spread it to other children in the neighborhood who also have been withheld from vaccines. So for the most part, these are importations by our own children. And if you look at our hemisphere, all the way from the Eskimo up north down to the tip of South America, all those countries have eliminated measles. There is only one country in the entire hemisphere where measles is currently being transmitted. That's the U.S. of A. They're doing a better job in eliminating measles in Nicaragua, in Chile, Argentina, Mexico, Costa Rica. We're the ones who are not doing a good job.
Yeah, and
this is the reverse side of the coin. we're actually hazardous to those other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and just to add on that, on another note, you could say the same thing about MRSA and these bacteria-resistant organisms, where we have some of the highest rates in the world. We have the, according to CDDEP, third highest percentage of staph cultures that are MRSA positive in the world. And the others are, I think, Israel, Malta, real small countries. So, we're the ones that are tending to be infecting the rest of the world. And a lot of this is, I have always felt, because we don't have a standardized healthcare system. Our healthcare system is very fragmented, and we're concerned about rights more than public health. And believe me, when you live in a society, you have individual rights, but you also have responsibilities to other citizens and your community as a whole. And the United States right now is falling behind in many different areas of infectious disease, and unfortunately, measles is probably one of the most infectious and the most preventable disease that we have.
Here's a question from Rick that says, how does measles compare with the flu in terms of annual mortality? And if, as I suspect, flu results in many more deaths, why are we so nonchalant when it comes to the flu vaccine? I don't question the concern over measles, but it seems that we should be consistent when it comes to public health. Dr. Schaffner?
Well, remember, Kevin said vaccines differ and they result in different public policies. The vast majority of influenza-related deaths relate to people age 65 and older. And so we don't have an easy way, even if we wanted to administer vaccine uniformly to all those people. We wait for them to come in voluntarily. The influenza vaccine is not nearly as good a vaccine as the measles vaccine. And I would say further, there are some places in the country concerned about influenza-related deaths in children that have actually mandated influenza vaccine for school attendance. New Jersey, I believe, is one such state. But that's very rare. So different vaccines, different public policy.
Another listener sent an email wanting to know what's the percentage of deaths compared to Ebola, talking about measles.
Well, Ebola, obviously, if you get it, and if you get it in West Africa, in the context of the much less elaborate medical care that's available there, can have death rates of 50% and higher. When we care for Ebola patients here in the United States, the death rate is substantially lower. Measles used to affect literally every child that was born in the United States. And we had some 400,000 cases annually, hospitalizations, doctor visits, complications. Those cases resulted in 400 to 500 children who died each year with measles and its complications. So measles is a very, very serious disease. Anybody who's ever seen a child with measles doesn't want any other child ever to have it.
Yeah, and I think another concept, and this is hard to understand, but if you have a very, very deadly, quickly fatal virus that doesn't spread very easily, such as Ebola, it tends to burn out. The measles virus has, the wrong balance for us, the right balance for the virus of, not killing every child, just a couple, a thousand, making them horribly sick, and then spreading like you can't believe. A very, very contagious, and these children get very sick. So that it actually has the combination to make it a very dangerous virus and a very dangerous disease, and this is why you need to get vaccinated.
Let's make the calls. This is Price. Good morning, Price.
Good morning, gentlemen. I want to describe why I'm asking this question. Back in the 40s and 50s, my mother was a foster parent for the county, and we had several hundred kids come through our house. If there was a childhood disease, I caught it. And I've had the measles twice. I'm in my 70s. Is there a chance I can catch it again?
Well, first of all, Bryce, you did get a lot of infections back then in the 40s and 50s that we've now eliminated through vaccination. Second, cases of measles, rarer than hen's teeth. if that's truly the case, you are a biological outlier. You know, that's very strange. And the answer is, if you've had measles, the chances of you getting another case are almost zero. You should not have any risk of getting measles ever again.
Yeah, thank you, Price. Yeah,
but you can get German measles, though, right? You can get the other type,
and that's
different virus. Confused. Yeah. There's a different virus. That's why the vaccine has actually three MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella. Rubella is the German measles, the three-day measles, which is usually milder when you get it, providing you're not pregnant. And that's where that danger is. It causes severe birth defects.
Dr. Ryan Stanton is an ER doc that comes in once a month, and he's texted me this morning. He's listening to us, and he says three problems. Number one, context. Few, especially young parents, have seen the ravages of these diseases. We don't fear these diseases anymore. If you'd ever seen a child die, getting the vaccine wouldn't even be a question. Number two, bad science. The majority of arguments against are based on bad, science, as we talked about, autism, et cetera, that's been disproven. And number three, government. Americans distrust the government and thus transpose conspiracy theories onto the vaccine debate. What do you say about that?
I think Dr. Stanton is right on the money. Young parents, as I said before, haven't ever seen measles and therefore don't respect and fear it and therefore have questions about the need for the vaccine. And that conspiracy theory, governmental concern, is another one. Let me put to rest again this notion that laws obliging children to be vaccinated before they can attend daycare and school are not federal. They were passed by the House and the Senate in each state legislature. Actually, I think Nevada only has a unicameral legislature. So it was passed in this country 99 times. And then the governors of all political persuasions signed off on those laws. So we in the United States, in a marvel of democracy, voted really to protect our children. We should not erode that protection now. We should remain committed to it. We were the world's leaders in protecting our children. We need to remain the leaders.
Professor of Preventive Medicine and Infectious Diseases at Vanderbilt School of Medicine is with us. He is Dr. William Schaffner. He's on the phone. Dr. Kevin Cavanaugh in the studio. Kevin, you got a comment to make.
Yeah, just about the government intervention. I think we saw Ebola really strike fear in the hearts of Americans, and there were certainly calls for government intervention with that virus. I can remember one caller quite insistent in talking about talk radio shows of how that the healthcare workers should be quarantined for 30 days plus, and this is something I think that when it comes to public health and protection of citizens and prevention of spread of disease is one area where the government needs to act responsibly, but it is really the government being us as a community needs to get together and enforce standards that protect our citizens.
This is Mary. Good morning, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Actually, the gentleman that called right before me asked the question that I was interested in for those of us who had the measles and had the mumps before the vaccines were created, that we're still immune to these diseases.
Yeah, we can comfort you about that, Mary. If you've had the illnesses, you're very unlikely to get them again. Once done is wonderful. And, of course, the vaccine actually substitutes for the illness. It prevents the illness and gives you long-term protection. Certainly for the measles, a little less certain for the mumps, but nonetheless, very good protection for a long period of time.
Great. Thank you very much. In fact, I love your voice, by the way.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Mary. And here's one. You'll appreciate this, I think, Dr. Shepherd says, ask Captain Kirk if we older folks should get the measles vaccine. And he says, again, if you've had it once, you've already said you shouldn't have to have it again, right?
Yes,
if
that's
you've never had it and never had measles, should you have it as an adult?
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
Yeah. I agree with Kevin.
Yeah. Definitely.
If you've never had the measles, you're still susceptible. You've managed to escape. And sure, you ought to get vaccinated. And what you'll get is MMR, measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, because that's the way it's available in the United States.
All right. This is Bill. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good morning. I haven't caught the whole show, but earlier I thought I understood the statement that the majority of our measles cases are imported by our own children.
That's correct, Bill.
Okay.
That's the way
then,
it happens.
Then if that's the case, a passport is a privilege that we give. Why would it not be a requirement to get a passport, not only going out, but for people coming in to show proof of vaccination?
You know, that sort of thing, as far as I know, has actually been proposed, but on a feasibility basis, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of passports are issued each year, and that would be a federal imposition. And I think what is said is that we ought to do this by vaccinating at the state level, and then by the time the child needs a passport, of course, they would be completely protected.
Yeah, and that gets complicated in protecting infectious diseases travelers, because believe me, there's just not measles that you can pick up when you go overseas, and it will actually vary between the different countries of what types of vaccinations and what types of diseases you need to be protected on, and that can actually vary over time. So, you know, you almost have to look at, you know, what's the flavor of the year in the country that you're visiting, and then get a whole string of vaccines and shots.
Yeah.
They have doctors that just specialize in that. And so to legislate, of course, you can cherry pick or laser and say, we're just going to do it for measles. But in reality, then, you might be creating it saying, well, I got my measles shot, so I'm okay for everything else. You can get a ton of stuff when you go overseas.
Well, our problem right now appears to be measles, so wouldn't that be a great start?
Oh, I think you can get a lot of different problems, such as malaria and everything else when you go overseas. So, I mean, you know, the topic of discussion right now is measles, but you've got many, many different types of infectious diseases that you can be exposed to overseas. And the chances of, for example, being exposed to malaria may be much greater in Uganda than getting exposed to measles. And so, and of course, if you went to Mexico or Central America, your chances of getting exposed to measles is probably very, very small.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Here's a question from Tim. Wanted to know, if you get the measles vaccine and you don't get measles, are you also protected from shingles?
There's a bit of confusion there. The virus that predisposes you to shingles is actually the chickenpox virus.
Oh, okay.
And there is a vaccination against chickenpox that is also given now universally to children. But shingles is recrudescent, that is waking up chickenpox virus.
Gotcha. Okay, let's go to Lou Ann. Good morning.
Hi. Just a question, and it may seem out in left field. I'm a case manager for special needs folks. I have a lot of autistic people on my caseload, and I know that that's a concern for some of these vaccinations that it causes autism. Whether it's linked or not, I don't know. But just throwing this out there, food for thought. One of the individuals on my caseload recently had genetic testing or DNA testing done through a company called Sure Genes, and what they found was that the antipsychotics that they had been prescribing him over the years, he lacked the transporter gene to carry those drugs to his brain to do what they were supposed to do. And instead of helping him, they were actually making him aggressive and violent. So now, going forward, that's huge for his treatment. I wonder if there's any type of test available to tell with these vaccinations if they may be harmful to an individual or not.
Yeah, and I think that's a wonderful question, and aren't you up to date? You're describing personalized medicine. Today, medical care, sophisticated molecular medicine, is able to identify genetic components. We differ in them that make us more or less susceptible to side effects, for example, to some drugs, just as you have said. At the moment, there is no such test that applies to vaccines, which would permit us to know in advance who's going to have one of those very, very rare adverse reactions to a vaccine. I wish they were.
Okay.
Yeah, and but you also have to remember the vaccine is really giving you a milder disease than if you got the disease itself. So, of course, you could react to a preservative or something that has been discussed, but these are, when you look at risk-benefit ratios or whether I should take this, definitely take the vaccine.
We are out of time, and Dr. William Schaffer, thank you so much for being with us this morning. It's been valuable information.
Jack and Kevin, thank you so much for the privilege of being with you.
On the show, Kevin.
And Kevin, thank you for arranging to have him here. We'll see you next month.